Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. This is Nick Wright. And you know what? It is officially Baker time in Cleveland, Ohio. We'll talk about that. Plus, are the Patriots in panic mode? The Giants all-pro defensive tackle Damon Snacks Harrison joins us live in studio.
Snacks in the morning.
No
always a good
to
time for Snacks. Good
but
to see him.
We'll start with a little Monday Night Football. This was a game. Bucks and Steelers. Storylines for days. A lot of turmoil surrounding Pittsburgh all week, but it didn't matter on the field. Big Ben was lights out, completing 30 of his 38 passes for 353 yards and three touchdowns. Ryan Fitzpatrick had a tale of two halves. Fitzpatrick in the first, Fitzmagic in the second, his third straight game of at least 400 passing yards. He also had three costly interceptions, though. Bucks come up short. Steelers get their first win of the year.
You know what, we always say winning cures a lot of things, but I still think the biggest issue, if you will, was outside the locker room, people perceiving different things. I'm not saying we don't have issues. All teams have issues, and there's different things going on, but I think it was a little bigger than people probably – than it really is.
We put ourselves in a bad spot, and they did a great job creating and forcing the turnovers, but, you know, for us it was let's just go out there and play. You know, let's go out there and play and see what happens. And, you know, we did that. We gave ourselves a chance, but weren't able to finish it.
All right, CeCe, let's start with you. What did the Steelers show you by surviving what Tampa Bay had to offer last night, that comeback in the second half?
Yeah, I think the Pittsburgh Steelers and their great history, they've had a 20-point lead a number of times, never lost a 20-point lead. That was on the board last night. What did they show me? Regardless of how many points they score, when they face the better teams in the NFL, they're going to struggle defensively. Their cornerback play, their inability to be able to make big plays on a regular basis, I think it's going to come back to haunt them. Sometimes they get a vicious pass rush. Then other times the quarterback has all day throw. So that, to me, was the most alarming thing because they look like a team, one of the elite teams in the league, especially when they had a three turnovers given to them in the first half. It's going to be hard to beat one of the elite teams when you have – that type of, and especially
in a defensive score, not just three turnovers, but I mean, the other team throws an interception in the red zone and then throws another interception that is returned for a touchdown. Like, it would have been hard to lose typically that type of game. The Steelers came close.
So, even as well as they were playing, I watched the whole game, stayed with it. I had a feeling Tampa Bay was going to come back, and they did, and still had.
You had that feeling after the way you saw them play in the first half?
Because I know Pittsburgh's defense. Yeah. I've been complaining about Pittsburgh's defense for a long time. People tend to talk about the offense because of the personalities, because of the contract holdout. But if we're going to keep our standard for Pittsburgh exactly like Pittsburgh's standard, which is to win a championship, then we should look at that defense, wonder, is that defense good enough to win a championship? And that's what I saw when you seen Tampa Bay be able to come back in that second half and make it a close game.
Listen, Pittsburgh's passing game is as good as it's been, even without Le'Veon Bell. It's almost like because they don't have Le'Veon Bell to rely on in the running game, that it's just Big Ben all the time. Juju's turned into an excellent player. You obviously had the really cool Vance McDonald play yesterday where he mush faces Chris Conte up the sideline. AB didn't have a huge game, but he had the one great play where he made Brent Grimes look his age for the first time this season. But it was all muted by the fact that it's the defense and the penalties. The penalties for Pittsburgh, this is a new thing. In Mike Tomlin's 12 years there, there had only been one time this team was in the top 10 in the league in penalties. They are the most penalized team in football right now by a wide margin. And the defensive struggles, color me confused on this, because they don't have terrible defensive personnel. Now, Bart Scott a few days ago made the point with the type of defense they like to play, it's very important that they have middle linebacker play and safety play. And maybe that's the real issue, because they have good defensive linemen. I like their linebackers. Joe Hayden is at least one quality corner, but John Bostic and Vince Williams on the inside of the linebacking core have not been able to fill in for Ryan Shazier even combined. And they spent a first-round pick on a safety who looks like a rookie right now. So maybe that's the answer, because I look at a team that's got Bud Dupree, T.J. Watt, Cam Hayward, Stephen Tuitt, Joe Hayden, and I say they should at least be an average defense. And if people didn't watch the game, they should know, yeah, they forced three first-half turnovers. Two of those were given to them. Ryan Fitzpatrick threw lasers to the defense. It wasn't some great defensive play. It would have been a gaffe not to pick those balls off.
So what does this say now about the Steelers? They did rack up all these penalties. They do have questions on their defense. They also came away with the win. Does that ease your concerns about this team at all?
No, because of the turnovers. It's hard to lose a game when you win that turnover margin the way that they won it. No, it doesn't ease my mind, because good football teams don't have 3 weeks in a row 12 pennies. What is it? 12 penalties, 13 penalties.
Is that on Mike Tomlin?
Well, you can't blame it all on the coach. It's poor fundamentals. Now, last night, it's a sloppy field. Typically, when you have a sloppy field, you're going to see more clutching and grabbing. So, typically, in a sloppy field, I can make more excuses. But you can't make excuses for personal fouls. 8 major fouls. Like, you're not going to be able to. 8 times you're going to give the team 10 or 15 yards? No, you're not going to be able to win. So, no, it didn't alleviate my concern. I know the way Mike Tomlin has coached. So there's no way that Mike Tomlin this offseason said, you know something, guys? We're going to play edgy football. Last year, 20th in penalties. Mike Tomlin throughout his career, one of the least penalized teams.
Always one of the least penalized teams.
No, this team, at this juncture of the season, now we'll just have to keep our eyes on it. Is this going to be the theme, what they did in the first 3 games? Will that continue? Because teams will get a lot better, and those penalties are out of character for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
When you look at it, if you hadn't seen the games, and you just know 3 games in what everyone's record is in the NFL, how good teams are, what the preemptive power rankings are, and you say, okay, you've played 3 games. On the road at Cleveland, home for Kansas City, on the road at Tampa. 1-1-1 is actually not terrible, all things considered. Cleveland's better than a lot of people anticipated it would be. Kansas City's far better than a lot of people anticipated it would be. And Tampa, until last night, was the story of the league. So you're at even money, essentially, going into your next 13 weeks. So from a record perspective, they win next week. They're probably going to be first place in the NFC, in the AFC North. But it is, to me, the bigger concerns of, are they going to have a consistent running game at any point this year? Meaning, is Le'Veon Bell going to come back? Because the time of possession can help minimize the lack of a defense. And what can they do? Because I don't think this Steelers team has to have a top 8 defense. But they can't have a bottom 10 defense. And right now, that's what it's looking like. How can they get to just an average defense? So I know Steelers fans this morning are like, you got to be kidding us. We got our first win of the year, and you guys are talking about the deficiencies. Well, the Steelers are graded on a different curve than a lot of teams, not just because of the history, but because of the preseason expectations. This was one of the 5 or 6 Super Bowl favorites across the league, and even last night, they didn't quite look like it.
It doesn't look like Le'Veon Bell is coming back. It looks like now the team is looking at trade offers for him.
No. I wouldn't say that.
Okay.
I wouldn't say
he's not. Well, how about in the next couple weeks?
I would say right now it's on the board that he could be traded. But he's going to play football somewhere this year. He's
Correct.
Not going to just give away the year.
Correct. I guess what I'm saying is it doesn't look like he's coming back to the Steelers in the next couple weeks. Connor did not look great except for that last run that he had. Where do you think there's more problems on this team, with their running game right now or with their defense?
I wouldn't be worried about their running game. They ran the ball at the end of the game against a stout Tampa Bay defense. When they needed to run the ball, everyone in the stadium, everyone in the television audience knew they were going to run it. They ran the football. Also, they had wholesale substitutions on their line, on that right side.
David DeCastro out. For
yeah,
the game.
And Marcus Gilbert out. Like, you're missing really good football players. So, no, not worried about the running game. And also, man, Vance McDonald, that dude can run. Him and Jesse James, James Washington, the wide receivers they have, Juju Smith-Schuster is for real. So, I don't have to be able to run the ball as much. I got an all-time great quarterback in Ben Roethlisberger.
He played really well last night.
You know, so the defense, all they got to do is be able to hold themselves. They don't need to be a top 10 defense. If they're in the top half of the league, 16 defenses, they're going to be a top 20, they're going to be okay. And red zone defense, how good are they going to be there? If people can give up yards, if you have a lead like that, you're going to be able, they're going to be okay. So there are a lot of good things going on in Pittsburgh, but if we're going to keep the Super Bowl aspirations, we got to keep it real.
And the last eight quarters of football, their opposing quarterback, Pat Mahomes, a game ago, threw for 6 touchdowns. Yet last night, Ryan Fitzpatrick threw for 400 yards and 3 touchdowns. Like, the week one, Tyrod Taylor couldn't get anything going. The only reason that game was a tie was because of Big Ben. Since then, Big Ben's played well. The passing game has been elite.
Yeah.
The defense looks – we talk all about how bad the Chiefs' defense is. It was one of the best teams in the AFC. The Steelers' defense last 2 weeks has looked on par with them. That's problematic for any team in the league right now.
All right, the Pittsburgh Steelers picking up their first win. We mentioned the Cleveland Browns coming up. What can we expect from Baker Mayfield now that he's the man in Cleveland? That's next. This is First Things First. All right, we're going to get to Baker Mayfield and his first start in just a second. But first, Antonio Brown may have had a rough week, but he did not have a rough game. Catches the pass, scores the touchdown.
I mean, this is a quick smoke route, right? See Brent Grimes
absolutely
playing off him?
Seeing they're in cover one, knowing the blitz, knowing they may not have it picked up, like the matchup outside. AB does a great job when the ball's in the air. You can't see it, but he comes inside just enough to get inside on Grimes because you know Grimes doesn't have help inside. This is why he's a special player.
All right, same game. Fitzy finds Mike Evans for the touchdown. Evans catches it on his back. It's nice, but this reaction from Fitzpatrick even better.
Fitzy loves playing football, man. I'll give him credit. He enjoys himself out there.
Look at that. Look at that. Look at the eyes.
Man, yeah, he's got amnesia. Freaking. He forgot about the earlier part of the game.
Yeah, really.
What happened? I don't know. Hey, what you talking about, Willis?
And now this play.
Back to the Steelers. Vance McDonald, the ultimate stiff arm, just throws Chris Conner to the ground while on his way to the end zone.
Now, this is one of the nastiest stiff arms that I've seen. All right, this right here, when you go in and watch the film the next day with your teammates, man, you talking about bad, you talking about humiliating. Conte, after this one, took it to the house. He said, you know something, he stiff armed me so bad, my knee hurt.
I'm done for the day. What's that like in the film room for Chris Conte?
Oh, that's brutal. Hey, right, what you doing? Were you tackling? Buy a ticket if you're going to go for a ride.
I mean,
man, you straight, homie, straight arm, right to the chin.
Lines.
But then he got jumped over, too. That was unbelievable.
All right, moving on. The Browns quarterback of the future will actually start now. Baker Mayfield named the team starter, not surprising. He'll be the Browns' 30th starting quarterback since 1999. The number one overall pick came in last week against the Jets, rallied the Browns to their first win in 635 days. He will take on an 0-3 Raiders team on Sunday. Said Baker yesterday, I'm living my dream and I wouldn't have it any other way. Chris, what will Baker's biggest challenge be?
I think the biggest challenge for young quarterbacks is trying to create an identity that they can play with for a long period of time. Baker Mayfield has all the talent, all the attributes, the intangibles. He loves football. He's a student of the game. A photographic memory, some of the coaches in the scouting process said. He's a leader, a born leader. He's high achiever at every level. He's also faced a lot of adversity. Like no quarterback that we've seen transferred twice as a walk-on.
Walk-on
twice. I mean, you don't see that in the great lineage of quarterbacks that we've had. So in doing that, what he has done, though, he's made a lot of big plays throwing the ball down the field. And he's also been a very, very good athlete. He's not going to be a great athlete playing in the NFL. So what he's going to have to be able to do is, and Trent Dilfer spoke to this on Colin's show yesterday, And is he going to be a thrower of the football and trying to make big plays down the field like Matthew Stafford? Or is he going to be surgeon-like and just hit you with 1,000 paper cuts, the short passing game? Because we know he can drive the ball down the field. And a lot of young quarterbacks, they fall in love with that. I'm going to drive it down the field. But as we can see, Aaron can do that, Aaron Rodgers, but he can also dink and dunk you, which leaves you in a pool of blood. Tom Brady is the best at that, but when he needs to drive the ball down the field. So for me, how do I win football games and create an identity where I'm a surgeon? I'm going to throw the ball to the people that are open as quick as possible because that's the most effective way. And I can do that for a long period of time compared to I'm going to try to scramble around. I'm going to try to be like Russell Wilson. And he's not the athlete that Russell Wilson is. And it will catch up to him in the NFL. So I just hope in trying to win games that he understands, man, I want to be a surgeon quarterback compared to a guy just a thrower and a big play quarterback.
He's not only not the athlete Russell Wilson is, we have no way to know if he's going to have the elite durability Russell Wilson has had. Nobody knows that until, like, Russell Wilson's been dinged a lot, but for how often he's been hit over the last few years, that he hasn't suffered a major injury, that's, as you would say, sometimes guys are just touched by God a little bit. Like, his body's just built for it. When you were talking about is he going to be a thrower or a surgeon, and the thrower example you used, Matt Stafford, the surgeon example I thought you were going to use is the guy people talk about with him a lot, which is Drew Brees.
Yeah, Drew Brees is a whole nother level. Drew Brees, I believe, is in a class by himself as far as the guys who took advantage of their overall body. Drew Brees, he's not an athlete like Russell Wilson, but in talking to Drew Brees and spending time doing the game this weekend, Drew Brees believes he has elite feet. And he believes getting his feet in position allows him to be very, very accurate. That's the part that Baker, that will make him a surgeon. If he continues to work on his foot.
Well, and that's what I wanted to talk about, because the reason I bring up Brees is not just because Brees has talked about Baker, not just because they have the comps. Brees last year sets the all-time completion percentage record at 72%. This year he's at 80, which is comedy. That's like Texas 7-on-7. When there's no pass rush, that's not supposed to be able to happen at any level. That doesn't happen in college football, much less in the NFL. Baker, obviously, if I'm Baker Mayfield, I'm happy this year with 60%. Like, as a rookie player with the Cleveland Browns, especially as that offensive line seems to be a work in progress. But the reason that I am so bullish on Baker Mayfield is not because of the half of football we saw him play. It's because of something you verbalized to me, C, when we were talking this weekend, which is almost going to sound cliche, but you said, man, some people are just born to do things.
Yeah.
You're like, nobody bats an eye when there's a kid that is a prodigy violinist. And it's just like, man, I don't know why. He was just here, put on the planet to play the violin. Like, and in basketball, we actually don't bat an eye. People say, listen, man, LeBron's worked really hard. And I'm not saying Baker's LeBron at all. But the guys that you just say, he was put on the planet. There's a reason that he's 6'8". There's a reason that he's 275 and jump like that. He's put on the planet to do this. I found it really interesting that is what you were saying about Baker. Like, some guys, despite physical limitations, whatever it is, they were put here to do something. And that's what it feels like with Baker as far as leadership and playing this position.
But why do you see that in Baker Mayfield and you didn't see it in Johnny Manziel or Tim Couch or Brady Quinn or any of these guys that we thought were heralded to be the next big thing in Cleveland?
There is no science to it. And that's why we'll always have the draft speculations. We'll always have the evaluations because we know the attributes that we want. But we don't know what a guy will do when he gets hit right on his chin. Now, given the NFL and their new rules, you're going to be able to play football and not get hit. But that used to be one of the tests about a quarterback that we didn't know. How does he do with pressure? How does he do with being the face of a franchise? How does he do with being football is the only thing in his life? There is no class. It's football all day, every day. Does that bring them up or can they not handle the pressure? So all those things that we've seen, the thing about Baker Mayfield was I watched Baker from afar before the Oklahoma-Ohio State game, and he knew I was watching him. Baker Mayfield went out of his way, stopped what he was doing, came over to me and introduced himself and said, I'm Baker Mayfield. I said, I know. I'm sitting here looking at the groceries. I want to be, as I prepare for the draft, I want to be like, man, this guy's 6'1". I want to look at it. He said, I went to introduce myself as Chris Carr. He said, no, I know exactly who you are. I allowed him to go back on the field. Then I went to talk to the support staff, and they talked about what he could do as a leader. They talked about his brain, the amount of information, how he was consumed with football. And then I saw the game. And then I saw him, which a lot of people took it as something bad. I saw him plant that flag in Ohio State Stadium now. They've been playing good football there, Nick, for over 120 years. There's only a few people. I saw John Elway scramble to his left one time at Ohio Stadium and throw the ball all the way back cross field when I was a youngster to beat Ohio State. It's only a few guys been able to do things like that. So for me, I took note of it. So it's some other little things that you see and you just feel. It's secretary. I don't know it, but I know it when I see it.
Yeah.
In Baker, that's what I see.
Saturday's college football doubleheader on Fox, starting in the Big Ten with number 14 Michigan taking on Northwestern, then number 11 Washington hosting 20th-ranked BYU. It all kicks off Saturday at 4 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
That BYU-Washington game should be good now. Washington bouncing back after that early season disappointment to Auburn. Should be a good game, man.
You guys want to go viral?
Yes.
Go viral. LeBron James was at Lakers Media Day yesterday, and it seemed like the Cavs have already forgotten him.
Hey, it's Cavs Media Day. hey, Channing, whose locker did you take? Come on, man.
Some dude?
Wow.
Channing Frye got there early.
Yes.
And took what I imagine is the most luxurious locker they have, the corner locker LeBron
used. It looks empty,
to
too.
Dibs on it. I got it. I'm one of the only old guys they got around this place.
Really?
Yeah, that's cool. He's a funny guy.
He's a funny guy, man.
I'm glad he went to Cleveland. We would have never known how funny he was.
Absolutely. He and Richard Jefferson, the podcast they were doing, he's a great locker room chemistry guy. And you saw when he left Cleveland in the trade, some of those little locker room issues started to bubble up again. When he first got there, he got them all together, started doing team dinners, a lot of stuff they hadn't been doing. He's a great glue locker room guy.
Well, now he's got a great locker.
Yeah, he's got a great locker. Yeah, good
time now for stories to start your morning. Ohio State will be without star defensive end Joey Bosa on Saturday when they take on Penn State. Urban Meyer said Bosa will be out a few more weeks after having abdominal surgery. See, how much will this impact the Buckeyes?
It's going to impact them. I mean, they got a couple other players to be able to fill in, but you're talking about one of the best football players in college football, not defensive players, not the best defensive end. He's the top five pick in the NFL draft. He's a guy that hadn't had durability issues. Man, I've been knowing the kid since he was about 8 years old. Now, he was born to play football. We talked about Baker Mayfield. This kid, they're going to miss him.
I think up until the injury, Nicky Bosa had been the best player in college football. I really believe that. He was making impact plays every single week, forcing fumbles, forcing turnovers. Can they overcome it? Yes. But this is, I think, their toughest regular season game of the year coming up this weekend. And be without their best player, that's tough.
Yeah, Fox is trying to, when I call games, not to kind of predict what the injury is going to be. Mm-hmm. I think this might be a sports hernia.
Sports hernia?
Yeah, they talking about lower.
Well, Fox is trying to get you to not predict injuries. You're 0 for 2.
Exactly.
No, I'm 2 for 2.
You're 2 for 2
indeed,
on predicting
right,
the correct one.
Not
you're 0 for 2,
2 I'm listening
in
to Fox.
Preventing yourself.
I need to talk to my teacher.
Hold on, let me quote Chris. I know we're not supposed to speculate on injuries, but let me tell you exactly what happened.
Ruptured Achilles.
Yes. But you were right.
Speaking of this.
Moving on to the NFL now, Dolphins defensive end William Hayes tore his ACL Sunday trying to avoid a roughing the passer penalty while sacking Derek Carr. Ugh, Nick, is the new sack rule actually bad for the league?
Man, Monday Night Football, we saw it seemed like the referee's first reaction was if a quarterback gets hit, we'll throw a flag, then we'll discuss if it was actually a penalty.
Yes.
They ended up picking a couple up. This is tragic. This guy doing his job, doing it well, in the last moment realizing, oh, I can't follow him.
Trying to follow the rules.
And now his career's altered. Like, I mean, I'm not.
Absolutely.
Guys come back from this. I get it. But this will cost him money. This will cost him a positive. Mm-hmm. This is awful, man.
This is going to hurt a good Dolphins team. They allow him to play defensive tackle in their nickel situations because they got Cameron Wake. They got Quinn on the outside. This is going to affect them going forward. And a player trying to adjust to the new rules. When the NFL changed the no hitting above the head rule, they wanted defensive backs to adjust. It was a little easier than defensive linemen and linebackers adjusting to landing on the quarterback. That's something we've done since the beginning of football.
And that was a critical change that had to happen.
Yes.
This seems over the top.
All right, the Josh Rosen era in Arizona has officially begun. Rosen will get the start week 4 against the Seahawks. The Cardinals are currently dead last in the league, averaging just 6.7 points per game. They've yet to get a win. See, was this the right time to make a switch for the Cardinals?
Man, you got to. You got to move. 0-3? I mean, there's only two ways that Sam really, like, keeps the job. Number one is that the team starts off at least 500, 2-1. Even 1-2 at this point, they'd probably still be playing.
With some offensive punch to go along with it.
Man, and if they were scoring points.
Yes.
All right, so your record and how does the offense look? In both these cases, not very good. You got to go with the kid. It's time to see Rosen.
I think week 4 is the perfect time to start him. Unfortunately for Josh, they started him with a few minutes left in week 3. They're like, hey, execute this comeback. We saw Baker do it.
Yeah.
And so that was unfortunate for him. I do find this interesting. Aside from the Jets and what they did with Darnold, every team said, no. We're taking the long view with our rookie first-round pick. It's week 4, and all of them are starting except for Lamar. Every single rookie first-round pick is going to start in week 4 except for Lamar Jackson. They all are into the fire now.
All right, finally, Jimmy Garoppolo's season is officially over after suffering a torn ACL. It happened Sunday in the Niners' loss to the Chiefs. KC's linebacker Justin Houston said that the injury was Jimmy G's fault and that he should have stepped out of bounds. So you said the same thing yesterday. What do you make of Houston's comments?
Absolutely. It's what any logical NFL player would be saying. Right now, we're at a critical point as far as the NFL and its overall popularity. Because we understand changing the rules as far as hitting the quarterbacks. But you can't make the quarterback not a football player. Jimmy Garoppolo tried to act like he's a football player. You're not a football player in the NFL anymore. That's why we saw all the penalties last night. Take advantage of all the rules, all the protections. You're supposed to be one of the smartest guys on the field, right? That's what they say about the quarterback. Go out of bounds. Utilize the rules to your benefit. They're doing everything to be able to protect you. We want our quarterback to be tough, but we want him to be smart before being tough, all right? You're not going to win any points in the locker room by going back into the field of play and taking on the defensive back. No, it was an idiotic play.
And this is, you know what that reminded me of? Something RG3 used to do, which was RG3 would get to the sideline, see the defenders let up because he was by the sideline and steal a few extra yards. And he did that, and then a few times he got lit up doing that. Sometimes it was a late hit, sometimes it wasn't. But newsflash, your body doesn't feel better because a flag came. Like, oh, okay, I got crushed there, but it was a 15-yard penalty. My body will recuperate better. No, it's still a hit. And Jimmy G was making a beeline to the sideline. And then at the last second, as defenders were letting up, said, oh, I can steal a few extra yards. This wasn't even the Josh Allen play where he hurdles the guy, where that was 3rd and 10. And even if that was a reckless play, at least there is a tangible thing you're gaining. Even if the risk be reward is skewed, I'm trying to get this first down. There was no reason for that. And that he didn't, the audience watching that needs to know, he blew his ACL before anyone touched him. He blew his ACL on the plant to go back into the field, and then he got hit.
And I do believe that, man, part of doing business in sports, you're going to get hurt. There are going to be times that you can't describe. It's just your time, and you plant, and you get hurt. But if he had just gone out of bounds, he wouldn't have had to plant. So people, they're saying, oh, it was just his time. No, it wasn't. It wasn't his time. It might have been another time. I could understand guys. Deshaun Watson.
Just dropping back in practice. It happened.
Couldn't avoid it. Teddy Bridgewater. Just dropping back in practice. Unavoidable. This was avoidable.
That to me, sorry to interrupt you, but that's such an important point. Because because some injuries are unavoidable, that the ones that are avoidable, you can't, it's rolling the dice an extra time you don't have to. It's you're playing this sport, and you know sometimes I'm going to get unlucky, sometimes I'm going to get rolled up, sometimes my body's just going to give out. But if you are doing something outside of really what your job description is, and Jimmy Garoppolo's job description is not to fight for an extra yard on the sideline in week 3 of the season, and now we're looking at an extended period.
He already had the first down. Right. There was no advantage to going back into the field.
And the Niners were actually executing an interesting little comeback there against Kansas City.
Right. And this is going to now leave us with, where does that leave the 49ers?
He got plenty of time. If y'all got one of them apps or something, y'all might be able to find him. He got plenty of time.
Okay. Well,
dinner dates, hey, ring him.
Not exactly where I was going, okay, but definitely an interesting.
Well, I mean, he hurt. He ain't going to be throwing the ball.
You're right. You're right. That's.
I mean, he's supposed to be a good-looking guy. I mean,
right.
How he chooses his dates and stuff.
Social life more
you
than
know.
The Niners.
Jimmy G, get busy now.
We are going to move on to the Pittsburgh Steelers now. We learned this week that the team's open to trading their star running back, the running back who has yet to run anywhere for the team as he's still holding out. According to a report, the New York Jets reached out to Pittsburgh. No offer was officially made, though. With Bell essentially being a one-year rental, teams might be hesitant while trying to acquire Le'Veon. So, CeCe, should the Steelers move on from Bell? Is it finally time?
Oh, absolutely not. For what? I wouldn't give away my season. I mean, I believe Pittsburgh is going to be one of the better teams in the AFC. I believe potentially they are the best team in the AFC if they get L. Bell back. Why would I allow him to do what he wants to do? All right? He's property of the Pittsburgh Steelers. I gave him a tender offer. All right? He hadn't signed that yet. He's going to show up because he's not going to give away this year. And I'm not going to help anyone else out in football. The Jets, unless they have a ridiculous offer, but there's two teams out there I got my eyes on, and it's not to trade him to. It's because I'm going to need him to beat these teams. Jacksonville. Look at L. Bell, how he does against Jacksonville. New England. What did Matt Patricia do to New England? He sent them running backs and them wide receivers on them shallow crosses, so those linebackers who couldn't cover them. Now, if I'm going to have to face those two teams, why would I give away an asset that I have the rights to? So after this season, he's going to move on his own. But the Pittsburgh Steelers start the season winning a championship. Connor is a good replacement player. Maybe next year he's ready to take that role. But L. Bell is going to be part of the Pittsburgh Steelers. If he wants to play football this year, he's going to play for the Pittsburgh Steelers, because I'm not going to turn in my Super Bowl aspirations just because he's not happy.
There's only one way I would trade L. Bell, again, barring some Khalil Mack-esque offer, which is not going to come for a one-year L. Bell or Le'Veon Bell rental. The only way I would trade him is if it's the rare player-for-player trade. I'm not trading Le'Veon Bell for future picks when I'm trying to win a Super Bowl right now. But I would bring up a trade that I think's interesting if the two players are amenable to it, and that's Le'Veon Bell and Earl Thomas swapping teams. That we talked about the Steelers, where their need is in the secondary, on defense. Earl is still a great player. The Seahawks, I know they drafted Rashad Penny. Right now, they need help in the backfield, and it looks like they are going to move on from Earl Thomas. That's a trade I would listen to, because at least you can argue there, while our offense will be getting worse with not having Le'Veon Bell, our defense will be getting markedly better. But I can't trade Le'Veon Bell for even a second-round pick, because I'm trying to win a championship right now.
But, guys, explain this to me, because I don't understand it. If he hasn't showed up yet, why would
he
show up before the 10th? I understand that. He has to show up by the 10th game in order for the team to accrue this actual season. So if he hasn't showed up by week
but
three.
But they could use him by. So let's just assume that he that
what's
he
his
says,
incentive to show up? I mean, he doesn't care clearly about the money.
Jenna,
so
but his incentive
show
to show up is at week 10.
Week 10.
So that's by week 10, they're not going to be eliminated from the playoffs. They're still going to have the 6 weeks in the season and the playoff stretch. Like, I'm assuming at this point he's not showing up until week 10. Like, you don't usually skip the first three games and then come back week six. I think, Chris, you're assuming it's probably going to be week 10. That's still drastically helps their ability to beat Jacksonville, New England. I would add match points with Kansas City. Whomever you play in the playoffs, I think they can.
Right. There's no advantage to him being out past week 10.
Right.
We know what the rule is, so we know he's going to show up at least at week 10. So that's easy to understand. People will be like, after week number one, was he going to show up this week? I wouldn't expect him to show up until week number 10. He told his offensive lineman he would be there week number one. So the reason why I don't think he's going to be there until week number 10 is because he delivered a message through his agent that he was worried about the toll on his body and the carries the Steelers are going to put on him. T. To me, that means I'm going to show up at the last possible minute,
yes.
And then that will be week number two.
But do either of you have any concerns that it took them 3 weeks to get their first win without Lev Bell? You think they can fly through 10 weeks and be fine in a great position with Connor?
It's not that I think they can fly through. It's can they be alive? And can the Steelers still be – I don't think that division has a great team in it. And I think they, without Le'Veon Bell, will beat Baltimore this weekend and be tied for first place in the division after this weekend, or in first place in the division because they have the tie after this weekend. So if they had lost last night, right, and after 6 weeks they were 0-4, 0-5-1, then, yeah, okay, like, doesn't matter when he comes back, our season's over, then I would potentially trade him. I still think the Steelers can win the Super Bowl this year, but I think their chances of doing that are drastically handicapped if Le'Veon Bell is not on their team once the playoffs start.
Do you think teams should go out and try to get Le'Veon Bell or try to offer up something for him?
I mean, you should try to, but I'm a hold true to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Yeah, if I'm the Jets, yeah, why wouldn't you? You have all that cap space. Get the player this year. You can't sign him till this summer. So, yes. I like the facts of the Jets trying to be aggressive and to get a running back to help out your franchise quarterback. He would look great here in New York City with the Jets. I don't like the Seattle trade because I don't think he fits into their cap and going forward. Is Seattle and John Snyder willing to pay a running back that kind of money? Well, they let rid of Marshawn Lynch because he wanted more money. That's the reason why he retired. It wasn't because he didn't want to play football. He wanted more money there.
My question with the Seattle thing is, if it's not for a long term, if it's just for the Earl's leaving after this year anyway, for both of these teams, it's an expiring asset.
Yeah, I would much rather get the draft pick.
Okay.
Where Seattle is in their rebuild, they need the draft pick. It's more important. They're not a Super Bowl caliber team if they add L. Bell. So the draft pick's more important to them.
More valuable than having 13 or 12 games from Le'Veon Bell.
It's a good conversation. All right, coming up, is Gronk the problem with the Patriots offense? That's next on First Things First.
Hey, guys, we'll get right back to the show. But first, I wanted to tell our listeners about HelloFresh. HelloFresh is a meal kit delivery service that shops, plans, and delivers step-by-step recipes and pre-measured ingredients so you can just cook, eat, and enjoy. Why do I recommend HelloFresh? There's something for everyone. Three plans to choose from: classic, veggie, and family. Each box is made up of fresh, responsibly obtained ingredients and carefully selected from farms and high-rated trusted sources. Make family dinners fuss-free with HelloFresh's Picky Eater, kid-tested and approved family plan recipes. Rediscover the excitement of cooking. Look forward to your HelloFresh delivery, knowing dinner just got that much easier. HelloFresh believes cooking should be simple and convenient, not a chore. All the ingredients come pre-measured in handy labeled meal kits so you know which ingredients go with which recipe. You won't spend all night in the kitchen because recipes only take around 30 minutes. There are so many benefits of subscribing, so you can keep enjoying HelloFresh week after week. Spend less time meal planning and grocery shopping each week and get that time back to do more of what you love. Get delicious, filling meals delivered right to your door every week for less than $10 per serving and free shipping for a total of $60 off. That's $20 off your first three boxes. Visit HelloFresh.com/FTF60 and enter FTF60. Again, for a total of $60 off, that's $20 off your first three boxes. Visit HelloFresh.com/FTF60 and enter FTF60 as the promo code. So visit HelloFresh today.
We will get to Drew Brees in a second, but first, guys, watch this. Yankees, Rays, Aaron Judge at the plate. Think fast. That was 109 miles per hour with the comeback.
That's terrifying. That is, Jenna, great job getting the actual numbers there. Coming back at him 109. And I mean,
back to your fundamentals, Nick. Right-hand pitcher, you got to fall off straight to the mound. If not, that's a dangerous play right there. Great reaction.
And you see the pitcher afterwards, when he doubles over, he realizes how close that was to disaster.
Even Aaron Judge was surprised.
Everybody. Oh, my goodness. That's a hell of a play.
Moving on. Texas's Seven Lakes Junior High School. This is junior high. Watch the quarterback fight off a few tackles, get the balls out, and the wide receiver makes a great catch. just nicely done.
There's some athletes on that field.
Well, you see
that's a junior high schooler catching
the ball. Hey, watch this roughing
the
passer here at the end, two on 34. Oh, he gets a lick in there. Good defense. Great catch.
Let me see what you're talking about with 34.
Watch him come in
late.
Jackass!
Oh, God. Oh, my gosh.
I love it.
That's a suspension in the NFL in Texas seventh grade football. It's good job, Jimmy.
Right.
All right, finally, high school football out of Georgia now. This is Villarica Wildcats. Mikos Todd goes full beast mode for the touchdown. Watch him take it all.
Oh,
now,
man.
I've seen this a few times. That's the way Adrian Peterson looked in high school. That's the way Leonard Fournette looked in high school. It's like, who put that grown man on the field with these kids?
That is, and that's the type of thing where you don't blame some parents of the opposing team if they pull their kid off the field. No. You're not trying to tackle this guy. Now, if we play the rest of the, if we let this run, watch at the end. He's about to score. There's a bit of a unnecessary block, right? Oh, take that, kid.
Yeah. That was a nice little blocking behind the play. Can't do that in the NFL anymore either.
Nope.
Hey, kids, we got bad news for you. If you make it to the NFL, they're not hitting anymore.
I know. Put your flags back on. Moving on to the Saints now. Is it too much to ask of Drew Brees to score 60 points a game, every game moving forward? Because their defense is bad. Their 34.3 points allowed per game are the worst in the NFL. And now this veteran cornerback, Patrick Robinson, former first-round pick, will be placed on injured reserve with a broken left ankle. CC, can the Saints' offense overcome their deficiencies on defense?
For one, people should know Patrick Robinson's a really good player. Last season, voted by Pro Football Focus, one of the best slot cornerbacks that we have. And when you start evaluating secondaries now, you can't evaluate an NFL defensive backfield secondary without evaluating who their nickel, that means their fifth defensive back, and who their dime players are. Because NFL's teams are playing over 60% of the time, they're playing nickel. So you need someone like Patrick Robinson, guys that are tweeners. He's not necessarily the best corner outside. He couldn't play safety, but he's somewhere in between because they can guard tight ends, they can guard running backs, and occasionally they can guard wide receivers in the slot. So it's a very, very useful position now in the NFL, far more popular now and necessary than at any other time. A lot like the slot receiver is a necessary evil for all teams. Drew Brees is one of the few guys, though, that I believe that they can do it. I spent a lot of time, because I covered this game, spent time with the Dennis Allen, the defensive coordinator, and he's concerned. He's not only concerned about their injuries, but he's concerned about the overall maturity in the defensive backfield of the Saints. He doesn't mind giving up some yardage, but you can't give up the big chunk plays and the touchdown passes that they have given up. Like, it's been ridiculous, the number of passes over 35 yards. I think five games in a row.
Six now. Six,
going back to even last season.
Yep.
Six games in a row that they keep giving up. Not only big plays, but big plays that are scoring plays. So Drew Brees, though, is playing at a level that I haven't seen many quarterbacks play at. He's so accurate with the football. Him and Sean Payton being in sync, and the Kamara-Michael Thomas combination coming out of the backfield, throwing the ball down the field, I believe it's a special combination, and the NFL is going to have to get used to them and try to take them out of the game if they're going to have success against the Saints.
Breeze is having the best start to a season he's ever had, and this is one of the greatest quarterbacks ever we're talking about. The problem for the Saints is their pass defense has been so bad, they are turning every quarterback they play into Drew Brees. So they don't – their defense has been so bad this year, they don't have an edge at the quarterback position because their defense is allowing the other guy to be Drew Brees.
So if we do like a tail of the tape.
A tail of the tape, I got it. Brees, 8 touchdowns, 0 picks. Their opponents, 10 touchdowns, 1 pick. Passer rating for Brees, 122. Opponents, 141.
Whoa.
They're allowing.
And they have a game in there with Tyrod Taylor.
Yes.
Playing in there.
Absolutely right. They're allowing 11 yards per pass attempt. Not per pass completion, per pass attempt. The Saints' pass defense numbers are horrifying. They have faced the fourth fewest total passes, but given up the fourth most yards. 36% of pass attempts against the Saints have gone for at least 15 yards. One out of three is going for a big play. Like, it is back to, unfortunately, early on, same old Saints, which is Breeze is awesome. We've got good weapons, I think, because of Thomas and when Ingram comes back and Kamara, maybe some of the best weapons he's had. But they're going to have to go score 35 to have a shot in these games until something changes defensively.
Is that personnel or is that coaching? Take the injuries out of it. Is that something that's fixable during the season, or are they going to have to go out and get guys next year?
Well, I met with the staff, and I met with the players. Now, do they have some talented players? Yeah, they have some talented young players. But right now, they don't have players playing with a lot of confidence. P.J. Williams, a corner that they started, he hadn't started week one and two. Crawley had started at the left cornerback spot for them. They benched Crawley. P.J., they bench him during the Atlanta game. We saw the rookie from Alabama carve him up pretty good. He had three
touchdowns. Calvin
Ridley. Yeah, so they had to bench him, and they had to go back to Crawley. But you can't hide guys. If P.J.'s dressed, you got to put him in the nickel somewhere. Then you lose Patrick Robinson. So, man, they are struggling right now. Dennis Allen believes that they need to. They're a young group, but they're not a great practice group. So this is one of them type of things is if – the coaching staff is looking for them to practice better than what they've practiced. So you think when they get to the game, that's how they've looked in practice. So until they become a better practice team, it's a young group led by Marshawn Lattimore last year, Pro Bowl in his rookie season.
What's going on with him?
He's lost his confidence. He didn't have a good training camp. And he's had a horrible three games. He started off the season awful against Evans of Tampa Bay. They put him one-on-one the way he traveled around with Evans. Evans chewed him up. So then Cleveland didn't have the deep threat. But then in last week's game, you could see the defense coordinator not putting him in as much man-to-man, playing a little more conservative. So I think that a very, very talented player is trying to find his way in the league after having a lot of success. But realizing this is a lot harder than it was potentially my rookie year, and he's struggling in year number two.
I went into this year believing Cam Jordan's the best player on this defense, despite Marshawn Lattimore's success at winning Defensive Rookie of the Year. You were with him last week. Is Lattimore the most important guy on the defense?
Yeah, because Cam, they can double up on him. If Lattimore is a stud, they can pretty much negate a big game on one side of the field, and then you could help out Crawley. You could help out P.J. Williams. You could play a lot of combination coverages. But right now, Dennis Allen doesn't have anything that he can go to as a staple defense. Yes, Cam Jordan, he should be considered the best player. But this defense goes the way Marshawn Lattimore goes, all right? So he is kind of the heartbeat and the pulse of the defense, even though Cam Jordan has been way more consistent.
The only saving grace for the Saints is they do have experience dealing with this. Since Drew Brees got there, they have given up 30 or more points 60 times. For context, in that same time frame, Brady's had to deal with his defense doing that 24 times. Peyton Manning, who I know hasn't played the last couple of years, 20 total times. Like Big Ben, 29 times.
What's the Saints, 60?
60 times they've given up at least 30 points since Drew Brees been their quarterback.
Big opportunity this weekend. Does the Saints defense turn Eli Manning into Peyton Manning based on your
absolutely
on your quarterback ratings, yeah, and really everything? So big opportunity for the Saints. If they beat the Giants, though, with this defense playing at this historically bad pace, they still would be 3-1, only losing the opening week to Tampa Bay,
right,
and Fitzy was on fire.
All right, we got to take a break. Coming up on the other side, what will we learn about the Rams tomorrow night against the Vikings? That's next on First Things First. All right, we're now going viral here at First Things First. Syracuse football is off to the first 4-0 start since the 1991 season, and they've got a big matchup this weekend against Clemson. However, the football team, not the only ones doing big things on campus. Check this out. Twitter user Joe Lee posted a plaque of our guy Nick Wright. They named the radio studio after you, Nick. How nice is that?
That's good stuff.
That's very nice you guys put on the show. Thank you. This is the coolest thing that's ever happened to me professionally.
Seriously,
that,
Nick.
What? Y'all walking out? You can't even walk out. I don't think y'all.
The dramatic effect, it would have been better. It would have been better for dramatic effect.
I mean, on a personal
If that's the best, then we're getting ready to be the worst.
No, that's honestly. No, I just, that's at WAER, which is the
yes
radio station, the NPR station on campus that Costas and Albert and Tirico and a lot of guys, Syracuse guys, work there. And the talk show studio, They named after me. I really appreciate his putting on the show. That's a really cool thing.
That's awesome. That's a tremendous, tremendous honor.
I talk a lot.
You're unbelievable. Thank you. By the way, America, Jenna was going to find a reason to stand up during today's show because of the dress she's wearing.
Because of the shirt that I'm wearing.
For whatever reason.
Jenna got here in a rush.
Jenna was going to find a reason to be so mad.
Okay. It didn't take long. We are a half hour in.
She's been eating chickpeas for a reason.
18 straight months. Time for stories to start your morning.
It ain't bragging if you got it, though, Nick.
Love the guys I work with. Brought to you by the unexpected energy of ExxonMobil. When Baker Mayfield came in to relieve Tyrod Taylor in the Jets game Thursday night, nobody was surprised. Nobody except the entire Jets defense. Jets safety Jamal Adams said they were not prepared for Baker Mayfield. See, are you surprised by this?
No, I'm not surprised. Now, I predicted that Baker Mayfield would go in this game because I know Todd Haley, and I saw how he had to call plays. So I could read the writing on the wall. Todd and him were trying to protect him. Now, he got nicked, but I believe he was going to get benched because he was not playing the type of quarterback that Todd Haley and Hugh require to run their offense. So, no, I'm not that surprised. I'm more surprised that Jamal admitted it.
Yeah.
Well, and maybe they would have spent a little time preparing for the possibility of playing Baker if this game were on a Sunday. But they were playing on a Thursday. Well, so you don't
it's a combination of both. They were in a tough spot. It's early in the season and nothing had come out of Cleveland that Baker might play.
Right. And so the admitting it is
you just can't tell the truth in that kind of
right.
situation.
You got to keep that to yourself.
Yes.
Okay.
All right, moving on to golf. After Tiger Woods' win at the Tour Championship, Phil Mickelson said, "It is the best I've ever seen him swing the club," which doesn't fare well for their Thanksgiving one-on-one matchup. See, how would you grade Tiger's game right now as we sit?
His game is fairly amazing. Now, when Tiger was at his peak, there weren't 10 other guys that could challenge him week in and week out. Now, with all the great young players we have throughout the world, I believe the competition is stiffer now. Tiger's changed his swing like 4 or 5 times, but I believe there was two things that really moved this forward for Tiger. One was the technology that he put in his driver, the TaylorMade, that he is hitting absolutely the straightest driver of the golf ball at any other point in his career. And sometimes you got to do this. You have a good relationship with someone, but you got to put your foot down just to let them know that you're serious. Tiger put that putter he did, he put her in the trunk.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Yes. And then she realized she had a good thing and said, let me out of here. I'm willing to fight for this relationship. So he got back together with her, and now they're all warm and fuzzy.
Oh,
so that driver and that putter had to bring the old girl back into the relationship.
Yep. It happens sometimes.
And on Phil's side of things, I think I know what Phil's doing here. Phil's got that match with Tiger,
yeah.
That $10 million pay-per-view. Phil was about a plus 160 dog before this weekend. Middle of this week, it was about plus 180. After Tiger won, he was plus 220. I think Phil's just trying to build Tiger up so
okay.
Phil can bet on himself at like 3-1.
That's definitely on the board.
Oh, yeah, because Phil's going to be gambling while he's gambling and gambling.
Don't put them in the Ryder Cup together because we got to play against the Europeans.
Absolutely.
All right, they're going to be gambling against each other during the match.
Right, we don't need that.
All right, with all eyes on LeBron James at Lakers Media Day, Luke Walton shifted the focus by announcing Rajon Rondo will be the Lakers starting point guard, to which reporters said, all right, that's great, but what about LeBron? I'm kidding. This, as Lonzo Ball continues to recover from offseason knee surgery, what do you think, Nick, good decision to go with Rondo over Lonzo?
Yeah, I think that if Lonzo were fully healthy, this wouldn't be happening. But because he's not, this is why you sign Rajon Rondo.
Yes.
So you can have better than replacement quality point guard play while Lonzo's recovering. It is interesting, once Lonzo is fully healthy, how quickly and easily Rondo relinquishes that starting job. But, yeah, this is a no-brainer for the Lakers.
Yeah, Lonzo's going to be the starting point guard. But I like Magic Johnson, and I like his imprint that he's making on Lonzo. But you can only do so much from the front office. Let's bring in someone that's going to be with him every day. So Magic trust Rondo to be able to groom, because Magic said one day this guy's jersey will be in the rafters in L.A. So let me bring in someone else who can help me between the front office, having Rondo in the locker room on the road. I believe that's part of Magic Johnson's master plan to help Lonzo.
All right. Moving on, when you win back-to-back championships and finals MVPs, you can pretty much do what you want, which means that Kevin Durant's time with the Warriors might be, could be, possibly numbered? When asked about free agency, Durant said, quote, "We will see what happens next year." Nick, do you expect Kevin Durant to stay with the Warriors after this season?
Let me flip a coin here.
I mean, really?
No, I don't. I think it's 50-50. I think it is. I think right now Durant, I don't think Durant knows. I think he's got Rich Kleinman, who's his business partner, who they do a lot of their, they just announced a TV series with, does a podcast series with, does investments with. I think he's pulling on him, hey, man, if you stay one more year in Oakland, it's not Oakland anymore. It's San Francisco. It's the billionaire's row at center court. It's a chance to potentially four-peat. And then he's got the Twitter side of him saying, man, I'm going to show these fools I can do this on my own. I can go win a championship in New York. I can go team up with a guy like either Jimmy Butler or Kyrie Irving and shift the balance of power. So I think there's going to be significant player movement this offseason. Kyrie, Jimmy Butler, Durant. People are going to start talking about Anthony Davis, even though I still think New Orleans will hold on to him with dear life. A lot of these guys are going to be moving. I'm not trying to hedge my bet here. I really think it is right now about a 50-50 proposition. I think anyone acting like Durant's made up his mind, I don't think that's the case. But you absolutely should not dismiss the very real possibility that even if they three-peat, he leaves.
Is there any possibility that he might go to Los Angeles with LeBron?
I think that's absolutely on the board. I think the reason the Lakers fought so hard to get Luol Deng to shave exactly enough money off his salary to where they could fit in a true max deal for Kevin Durant was to leave that window open. Because they got Luol Deng to shave enough money off. It wasn't that it created a hole for Kawhi. Durant can make more than Kawhi. So they got it to where Kawhi could fit in there, obviously, but also Kevin Durant could.
But if the reason Kevin Durant would leave Golden State would be to see if he can go do this sort of on his own, if you will, Why would the Lakers even be an option for him?
Yeah, see, I think it's very, very complicated. I think Kevin Durant, he's in a tough spot as far as what his legacy is going to be.
Right.
Any normal athlete that we've seen typically would just be like, no, I'm staying here. I like my situation here. It's very, very comfortable for me. I don't know why he would want to leave. But for me, he's earned that right, just like at OKC. It was like, he's joining Golden State. I couldn't hate on it because he earned the right to. He's gone there. He's done great. But I still think there's other goals as far as basketball. And what is ultimately are they going to say about Kevin Durant? And the opportunity, if they were to win this year, and the chance to four-peat, I just think that's just hard to turn down. But the problem is, in Golden State, if he stays there, how much credit ultimately does he get? Because it's different now. The rules are different now. Once he decided to join Steph and Clay and Dre and them, how we analyze him have been totally different. And I don't know if staying there is the best basketball challenge for him, because he has to determine that. And I think that there's something pulling at him to what makes him better from a basketball standpoint, and to staying at Golden State for a chance to four-peat with this great team that they have, is that the thing that does it?
And, Clay was asked about his pending free agency, and Clay was very clear. Man, people leave teams to try to get the situation I've got. I love it here. I'm staying here. Now, his mind could change, but he was very clear. Durant's asked about it, and he's like, I take everything year by year, and he has earned that right. Jenna, your question is a great one, which is the only mountain Durant has left to climb is the LeBron mountain, is becoming the best player in the world. You would think the only way he would remove the ability to climb that mountain is by teaming up with him.
Yes.
I think sometimes we try to assign logical behavior to guys by what we would consider logical behavior mm-hmm. to guys that have not always acted logically. I still to this day have Boston fans sending me, because Kyrie had a quote this week talking about how much he loves it there. Say, are you still think Kyrie might leave? Man, do people not remember the quotes he had?
At the finals
about loving Cleveland, about wanting to be in Cleveland. Oh, he's got this great situation. He had a great situation in Cleveland with the best player in the world and left. Like, a lot of these guys, we try to say, what would we do?
Right.
I from talking to people in the league, and I don't mean reporters, I mean people close to the players, they all believe it is absolutely on the board that Durant could go a bunch of different places. I had somebody say to me the other day that they think he's open to going back to Oklahoma City. Now, that one would shock me, but I can't dismiss any possibility because Durant, the other thing with Durant is, while the Lakers can give him max money, he, along with LeBron and Steph, are the three guys in this league that make so much money, non-basketball related, that they don't have to make any financial decisions based on a max salary slot.
Quickly, though, if he does go, where do you think he might end up?
If he leaves, I think New York is the most likely option. I think the Lakers are the second most likely option if he leaves.
Interesting. All right, let's get back to some football now. There are three undefeated teams left in the NFL, and the Rams are one of them. Off to a very hot start, as we all thought. But the teams that have beaten them, they've got a combined 1-8 record this season, and the Rams are dealing with a banged-up secondary. So a true test Thursday night versus the Vikings is exactly what the team needs. Just ask Rams head coach Sean McVay.
This week provides a great challenge, going against an excellent team, really sound in all three phases. They have great players. They're very well coached. A team that went deep into the playoffs last year, and they're going to be ready to go, and certainly we have to as well. And it's just like anything else. I thought our guys did some good things, but as coaches, first and foremost, and then as players, there's things that we can look at and see if we can improve upon on a short week.
All right, what is the biggest challenge, CC, that the Vikings defense presents this high-powered Rams offense Thursday night?
Well, the Vikings, they're good at every level. They have Pro Bowl players at every level. They play a number of different coverages. They can play man-to-man. I don't know if there's one wide receiver that they would decide to match up with Xavier Rhodes all over the field. So I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're going to play right and left.
Oh, that's interesting. Because I thought they might have Rhodes follow Cooks. You don't think they're going to do that?
This is the problem. They do so much motion. They do so many things before the snap. The Rams, they can get you confused. You can get guys running in each other. You can get a lot of natural picks. They want you to play man-to-man when they do that. No, you have to check into zone, make things a little more simpler. Man, you got to get after Jared Goff. Like, you have to make him win the game. I would put a lot of people to line of scrimmage to give McVay the impression that he can't run the football. And you got to make Jared Goff be able to beat you as a defense. Also, Mike Zimmer, in his tenure there with the Minnesota Vikings, going against rookie quarterbacks, which he went against last week in Buffalo, he was number one in the league as far as the worst passing percentage, yards, lack of touchdowns, completions. Man, they had success against it. So you can expect this Vikings defense to be able to bounce back against the Rams. You have to make this Rams offense one-dimensional, and you have to force Jared Goff to be able to beat you. You can't allow them to run the football with Todd Gurley because that sets up the play-action pass, and then they just have so many things that they can do to you.
And they got to look at, if you're the Vikings, what you did last year. I know the Rams are better than they were last year, but last year this was a good team. They played last year. The Rams got the opening kickoff, drove right down the field, scored a touchdown, did not score another point for the next 55 minutes. The rest of that football game lost 24-7. The Vikings forced Todd Gurley into his worst game of the year, 15 carries for 37 yards, forced Jared Goff into his second worst game of the year. And when I say the Rams are better this year than last year, they added Brandon Cooks on offense, but most of those other additions are defensively. And two of those additions aren't playing this weekend. In Peters and Aqib Talib aren't playing tomorrow, I should say. So these are two teams that are very similar to the teams they had on the field last year, except, of course, the Vikings have a giant upgrade at quarterback from Case to Kirk Cousins, assuming Kirk Cousins can hold on to the football.
Question for you. Tell me what the week has been like for the Vikings coming off the loss they had, a surprising loss. Like, what is the locker room like? What is prep like, especially when now you're getting ready for a team that you really do think is at that level?
I think at the Vikings, with the great expectations that they had, they'll look at the last 2 weeks in September to help kind of crystallize their season. They're struggling. We know their offensive line. They had a couple injuries. They have Pat Eflin, the center, who didn't play the first couple games. He was active last week, so he started the season on PUP. Now he's a good center. Is he ready for Sue and Donald? And he's not 100%. Had a significant injury in last year's playoff game that really had made his offseason full of rehab. So they have to be able to contain that middle part of the defense. And outside, Stephon Diggs, you're paying him a lot of money. Thielen, he's making good money. they have to be able to dominate the football game going against backups on the outside with the Rams having both of their corners sidelined in this game. So, yes, we know that Dalvin Cook didn't play last week, hamstring. He's going to be up in tomorrow's game. So, yeah, you have to be able to run the ball. But ultimately, if they're going to win, they got to be able to throw the ball and throw it outside.
And the taking advantage of the backup corners is the key for the Vikings offense. I totally agree with you. Like, that is where that with Diggs and Thielen, they should have a decided advantage. But I also I think you made a really interesting point when we look at the Vikings team, but they're one of four teams that has played a five-quarter game this year. And we have to take with a bit of a grain of salt the result the week after. Four times this year there's been an over – two times with four teams have played an overtime game to a tie. So they had to play a 70-minute football game. All four of those teams lost the following week. None of them seemed to be ready the following week. The Vikings, that is what they dealt with this past week against Buffalo after the tie against the Green Bay Packers.
And for the Vikings, sometimes it's problems on the field, but I can see them having problems with Griffin this week where they asked him to get a mental evaluation. I think that trickled into what they did. Seeing one of their teammates struggle, right now he's having a mental health issue. Where he's going to be and when he's going to be back with the team. If he is going to be back with the team this season, I think that team was dealing with that. I think that's what we saw in the Buffalo game because I was watching the score. I was like, whoa, what's going on here?
Yeah.
They have a lot of stuff going on with them. That's why I believe these last 2 weeks of September on and off the field will help them determine what type of season that they're going to have. So our prayers go out for Griffin that he gets the type of help that he needs, but these type of things, especially on a short week, they really affect the guys that you do battle with on and off the field.
And people need to know who Everson Griffin is. He's been on the team 9 years. He's a captain.
Yes.
And if people, there were some misreports in the local Minnesota media that trickled out, but he had an incident in the team hotel where people were very concerned about his mental well-being. So this is not only a teammate, but a guy who's been one of the longest tenured players, one of their best players,
yes,
who seemed to be in personal crisis 14 hours before they had to kick off against Buffalo. That seemed to have an effect on the game.
Back here, first things first, with former Super Bowl champ Chris Canty.
What's up, Chris? How you doing, Jenna?
I love it. It's a nice introduction, Nick, Kenny. Perfect.
I don't know what you do, man. I don't know what you do.
I didn't do anything.
Every time you come here, you destroy my family. My house is always nice and calm, and you come in and just destroy it. Jenna get to messing up.
Air five. Hey, Chris Kenny, I don't think anyone was...
She's getting ready to say.
Nothing. No idea. I was like, what are we talking about? I don't think anyone was expecting Carson Wentz to give an MVP performance in his first game back last week. Coming off knee surgery, coming off the highest of high expectations, Wentz was decent in his debut, throwing for over 250 yards and a touchdown in a win over the Colts. He's back at again this weekend to face the Tennessee Titans. His head coach fully understands and expects an upward trajectory with his play as the season goes on.
I think things will, you know, come into focus a little bit more for him this week. Did some great things, obviously, last week, and not only through the air, but with his arm and how he managed, you know, the run game. And, I just think that the more reps and the more time he's out there, it just gets better and better. Things will begin to slow down, you know, and we start getting more of the pieces around him back, you know, will also help.
Chris, expectations were tempered in game one, the first week that Carson Wentz saw a little play action here. But what about for week two? Do they open things up a little bit more for him?
Well, I don't know if they necessarily need to open things up. I think they'll have more in the game plan because Carson Wentz would have settled down. He won't necessarily have the emotions going like he did coming back because this is his first real game action since that injury in December. But I like what Doug Peterson tried to do at the beginning of that game, using that turbo tempo, letting Carson get into a rhythm, and, oh, by the way, standardizing that Colts defense. Colts came out in a lot of split safety looks because guess what? Jay Ajayi and Darren Sproles were down. Mm-hmm. So they weren't necessarily afraid of the run game of the Eagles. But when you looked at Carson's performance overall, there was a lot to be desired, particularly in the second and the third quarter. That turnover that he had coming out of halftime, the interception when he was targeting Zach Ertz on the stick route, and then, of course, that fumble that he had in the shadow of his own red zone. Those plays can't happen. Now, when the Indianapolis Colts went up with that field goal, he did respond with a 17-play, 75-yard drive and ultimately put the game out of reach, and it took up 11 minutes in that fourth quarter. So you gave the Colts back the ball with 3 minutes left. So that was phenomenal. He was at his best when his best was required. I'm just looking in this game against the Titans for Carson Wentz to clean up some of the mistakes that we saw. Getting Alshon Jeffrey back will help. He was full go yesterday in practice coming off of that shoulder injury. So those are the things that will help him moving forward. But this was a performance in his debut that he can build on.
I think that's spot on. I went back and rewatched this game last night because there's so many games going on at 1 p.m. on Sunday. It was hard to focus on just one because I wanted to watch Luck more closely, and I certainly wanted to watch Wentz more closely. And what I saw in that game was rust as far as some of the ball security, a lack of sharpness on some of the throws, as you're mentioning.
Fully expected.
Absolutely. But what I also saw, which I didn't know if I could fully expect, was Wentz in the biggest spots looking just like Carson Wentz, and some of the things that made him special last year, that made him the leading MVP candidate last year, which was third and nine. You've got not only a pass rush, but they get to him. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to be pressured, another thing to be hit. Him to shed that hit, roll out to his right, hit Nelson Aguilar as part of that 17-play, 75-yard drive. Mm-hmm. The things that I would have been most concerned about if he didn't look the same on, because those are things that made him special. The ability, the passes downfield. In the game, the two games with Nick Foles, they completed two passes 20-plus yards down the field. He completed two himself, or Carson completed two by himself, I should say, in last week's game. Like, you saw, okay, once he gets more game action, some of the rust starts to fall away. He, I think, is going to be the same guy he was last year, which was, at least in my eyes, a legitimate concern. So I was very encouraged by how he played, particularly on that drive that salted the game away.
Now, I've said this for the last couple of years. Carson, he's a superstar. He didn't have to play well in week number one for me to know that. Like, you know the guys can play this game and which guys can play it at a high level. Also, I think that we think that a knee injury is a major injury anymore, and it's really not, and especially for a quarterback. If you look at our top quarterbacks in this league, that being Aaron Rodgers, he's had three knee procedures. Tom Brady shattered his knee in the pocket. Drew Brees, from the other extent, his shoulder had to be reconstructed. So a lot of times these injuries, we as people covering the game, we think that, man, when was the last time we've seen a premier player's career altered by an ACL? Mm-hmm. It's very, very rare. These are like normal surgeries now. So we should expect him to be able to come back and play at a high level. We shouldn't expect in the first game with no training camp, no preseason games, and missing the type of action that he missed it. Yes, when you start facing those live bullets, it is totally different. But the Eagles will be a different offense when they get their running backs back, when they get Alshon Jeffries. Zach Ertz cannot be their leading receiver. He's one of three tight ends in Oakland and in San Francisco that leads their team in catches and in yards. So how explosive are you going to be with Zach Ertz? I don't think that much. So Alshon Jeffries coming back will help out Carson in game number two as a starter. And their running backs, Philadelphia should be able to run the football. They are at their best when they can run the football. Last week, how effective were they doing that? Very, very limited with all the injuries, Chris.
Yeah, and teams are having more success against the Titans by running the football versus throwing the football. Yep. Now, Dean Pease, their defensive coordinator, I know him. He's going to try to throw a lot of exotic pressures at Carson Wentz. So, CC, to your point, that run game is going to be important for the Eagles to stay on schedule with that offense. Second and six or better, third and three or better, not being obvious downs and distances where you have to throw the ball. And I think there's an opportunity for Doug Peterson to keep that Titans defense off balance. You saw a little bit in that Colts game, they had those one-word audibles for Carson Wentz. He's barking it out at the line of scrimmage. I did like the innovation of being able to utilize that bubble screen off of the zone read action. That's something that we haven't seen from this Eagles offense. So rather than have Carson Wentz being your running threat, right, if the defense overcommits to that run game, then you can throw the bubble out there to the slot. So I think that's an interesting little twist in this offense. But again, been Doug Peterson showing you that he's got a lot of answers to be able to offset the deficiencies of Carson Wentz until he gets his legs back under him. Because one of the things that makes Wentz special is his mobility.
So you brought it up. Alshon Jeffrey, he is cleared for contact. He could play this weekend, Chris Canty, week four against the Titans, which is a good game for him to come back to. What are you expecting from him? How much could he actually contribute? Again, another guy who hasn't played in quite a long time.
Well, I'm expecting this Philadelphia Eagles offense to finally get back on track.
Yes.
They haven't looked like themselves the entire season, even in the preseason. So going up against the Titans, who's a team that I think is false flagging, because you look at their first three opponents, you got the Dolphins, the Texans, and the Jags, not exactly explosive offenses. I think this is going to be the biggest test for them this season by far, and I'm not sure that personnel-wise they're going to be up to the challenge going against that Eagles skill position core.
And even if you think the Dolphins are actually a more explosive offense than they're getting credit for, that's the team they lost to. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. The Titans, they beat Houston. They beat Jacksonville in an awful game. Don't rewatch that game.
No.
Don't take time to rewatch that 9-6 game. But your point on the Eagles' offense is spot on. How are the Eagles right now 2-1? Because they have basically top 10 every category defense. They have the number one rush defense. They're number, I think, eighth in points allowed, ninth in yards allowed. Like, they have been excellent defensively. Offensively, aside from red zone efficiency, they haven't done anything great this season offensively. I think that can change as Carson and Alshon Jeffrey, which is a huge addition, comes back.
One thing Doug Peterson's got to be careful in trying to get Carson up to full speed is you have to realize who you're going against. And going against the Titans, Marcus Mariota, lowest quarterback rating with anyone over 25 attempts. He's also the only one with 25 attempts that doesn't have a touchdown pass. In six of the last eight games, seven starts for him, he's thrown the ball for less than 200 yards. So why would I be trying to force the ball with Carson doing a lot of things that I might turn the ball over when I think that the Tennessee Titans are going to have a hard time going against that Eagles defense?
All right, Chris, stick around. Coming up, why did one quarterback call his benching a slap in the face? That's next on First and First. Thursday nights are about to get a lot bigger as Fox becomes the new network home for Thursday night football. It is the Vikings and the Rams in a battle of NFC heavyweights. It is tonight at 7:30 Eastern on Fox, also live on NFL Network and streaming on Prime Video. Now, it's a game.
Cannot wait. What a game to debut our coverage this year.
All right, back here on First Things First with Chris Canty. Big news in college football. Quarterback Kelly Bryant decided to transfer from Clemson after Dabo Swinney decided to go with freshman Trevor Lawrence as the starter. Bryant had a 16-2 record, replacing Deshaun Watson after Clemson won the national title. He had this to say about his decision. They asked me how I felt about it. I was like, I'm not discrediting Trevor. He's doing everything ahead of him and asked of him. But on my side of it, I feel like I haven't done anything to not be the starter. I've been here. I've waited my turn. I've done everything y'all have asked me to do, plus more. I've never been a distraction. I've never been in trouble with anything. To me, it was kind of a slap in the face. All right, CC, start with you. What do you make of Kelly Bryant's decision?
Well, if you look at the top programs in college football, all of them have issues as far as their quarterback. Not only Clemson, look at Alabama, the same type of controversy. Ohio State, one of the teams finished right outside the college football playoff last year. You see they have Joe Burris. He transferred to LSU. He's starting for them now. They had the same thing going on. It's called over-recruiting. The top teams in college football, yes, they will recruit you. They'll tell you how much they love you. But if you think they're not out knocking on kids' doors trying to bring in more talented players, then you are wrong about college football. That's what these programs are going to do. So, yes, they're in love with you now until they fall in love with someone else later. Has Kelly Bryant developed the way that we thought? I thought he was going to be the next Deshaun Watson. But only reason why is because he was a black quarterback playing at Clemson. I was wrong about that because he didn't develop as a passer. Anytime you have a blue-chip kid, a five-star kid, who comes out of high school football, enrolls in Clemson early. He was the number one player in last year's rival in 247 scouting service. Mm-hmm. Number one player, number one pro quarterback. You know this kid's coming to campus. You have to make sure that the coaches think that he's going to be the future and not the right now. And Kelly Bryant didn't do that in the spring, didn't do that to the summer. They were basically even the whole way. And I always tell kids, they're always going to give it to the younger player in college because they have more years of experience and his ceiling is going to be higher because he hadn't been there 3 or 4 years like the other prospects typically have been. So I can understand why a guy would want to leave college because there's someone in front of them. But I have a problem with young athletes today because they don't want to compete. They want everything easy. It's not going to be easy. It's called sports. I had one guy in the NFL call me yesterday. Man, I'm not getting enough opportunities. I said, you starting in the NFL. I said, you one of 62 that play your position in the world. You're one of the best at doing your job. And I said, I hate to tell you, you need to get better. Get better at the small little things. And Kelly Bryant didn't get better at the small things. That's why his position was taken. And it's not a slap in the face. It's called competition, and it's called sports.
To me, it was clear, though. I seen this coming a couple of weeks ago. When you watch the Texas A&M game and you see Kelly Bryant's unwillingness to throw the ball down the field, and then when Sunshine comes in the game, the very first pass that he has, he throws it deep downfield outside to T. Higgins, and guess what? It's a touchdown.
I think they scored a touchdown in the first four possessions.
Absolutely, Nick, but that's the difference with Trevor Lawrence as your quarterback versus Kelly Bryant. Now, there's a little bit of a loss in terms of what your quarterback is bringing to the table in the run game, but in terms of your offense being able to match points with the best offenses in the country, like Alabama with Tua, and like Oklahoma, Lincoln Riley, and what they're doing out there with that program, and Kyle Murray, with the Georgias of the world, with Ohio State, you have to have a quarterback that's willing to push the ball down the field in the vertical passing game. Clemson has got the skill position players to get it done, but they just haven't had the quarterback that's willing to take those chances until now.
Listen, I think Trevor Lawrence is better. The guy's 18 years old and is a phenom.
He's a stud.
Absolutely. I think he's better.
6'5", 6'6".
I get it. I understand why they're making this move. I don't think it's fair to say Kelly Bryant didn't want to compete. Kelly Bryant competed with Deshaun Watson knowing he's not going to overtake him for 2 years. Kelly Bryant
You're not competing. You're just going to practice.
Exactly.
Sure. But his point that I did everything that was asked of me, that when he realized early on he wasn't going to overtake Deshaun Watson, didn't transfer, stayed there last year, got them to the college football playoff. In fact, the two quarterbacks that started the college football semifinal January 1 of this year are both transferring now, Jalen Hurts and Kelly Bryant. I understand why Clemson did what they did, because they have to – it's essentially a professional program. Mm-hmm. They have to go with the best option for them. And I give Dabo Swinney credit for announcing it when he did, before Kelly Bryant's played his fourth game and blown his – or played his fifth game and blown his eligibility, yep, to where now he can transfer and play somewhere next year. But I don't blame Kelly Bryant at all. This isn't, to me, a guy that – there's only going to be one quarterback spot. It's his last year of college football, and he just lost his job. I don't want to sit there and hope for an injury. I don't want to sit there and kind of be rooting against my team. I want to be able to go play football.
Well, this
somewhere.
Is the thing. He's not a pro. And I always tell my kids – listen, you better look behind you. If that guy's a pro, then you need to transfer. But right, he's a college student. He ain't playing no pro football. He's not cut out for pro football.
Ooh, Kelly his, or Trevor?
Kelly.
No, okay.
Trevor's
going pro.
Yes. So what you do is you enjoy the college experience. They're going to need Kelly Bryant the rest of this season. When I say not compete, that's what I say. Leave the school and not leave the situation. That football team's going to need two quarterbacks this year. I would stay there, finish out my season there, because I'm not playing pro. It's different than Jalen Hurt. Jalen's got a couple seasons left, and this is going to be his last stint at college football. Playing football, unless he goes to the CFL. The whole experience of coming to Clemson, you know that they can recruit someone over you. So you're naive being there. You went to a big-time school. You know that chance. When you go to these big-time schools, that is a reality that they could bring in someone that ultimately, even though you might, just because you wait don't mean that you're promised something. No, that means if you're the best player and you wait, you'll get the spot. But if you're not the best player, you shouldn't be playing.
I'm agreeing with you on that one, CC. The commentary from Kelly Bryant is what throws me off a little bit. By saying it's a slap in the face, just because you've said all the right things and you've done all the right things and that you quarterback that team to the college football playoff last year, all of those things are great, but it's a more talented player at that position now in Trevor Lawrence, and you recognize what he brings to the table, and ultimately that's what's in the best interest of this year's football team,
right,
knowing what's down the road. Clemson is going to sleepwalk through their ACC schedule, okay?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think they're going to get upset at home by Syracuse? You think Duke is going to do something? Stop it.
No.
Stop it. It's not going to happen. So ultimately this is about the competition that's down the road, and Dabo Swinney saw what happened with that Alabama team in the national championship when they went from Jalen Hurts to Tua Tagovailoa. That's the difference. That's why you need a quarterback like Trevor Lawrence.
And I don't think people are criticizing Dabo for this. I think people understand it. Now, Kelly, maybe the slap in the face comments misplaced. Maybe he's a young person who's probably a little heartbroken, and he's lashing out somewhat.
Yeah, but there's some feelings in there.
There's some feelings, yeah, right? Like, I mean, he's in his feelings a bit. But as far as if Clemson and Dabo have to worry about just what's best for them, then it's totally Kelly Bryant's prerogative to worry about, you know what, maybe it is best for them that they have a quality backup. But I want to play one more year of college football because I'm not a pro.
This is what kids miss out on. You miss out on the relationships. Urban Meyer and I, we talk about this with kids. Don't make a 3 or 4 year decision. Make a 40-year decision. Right now, I left Ohio State. 1987. In 2018, I can go to that campus. I can go to any game. I can do anything I want. I got relationships that I've established with boosters. I got relationships I've established with people in that university that will last a lifetime. That's what you miss when you transfer. All right? Those relationships and being part of Clemson and going to Clemson and being a Tiger and being in Death Valley and doing that for 4 or 5 years, that right there is his reward. All right? If you go somewhere else, you're just another name playing another season in college football. And what I have seen is guys have missed out on those relationships and they pass that off for just a little bit of fun and a half year of playing college football. Look long term. Believe in it. That's what college football is about. You and your colleagues on the football team, we have an advantage to the normal student body because I'm gonna get to know these people. I'm going to reach out. These people are going to get to know me, and I have a chance moving forward in my life, not like the other students do because they haven't had that access. Take advantage of that access and let that be the springboard into the rest of your life compared to football. Football, it served you well, bruh. It's paid for your education. Take advantage. Don't let football use you. You bounce around to a couple schools. Football's gotten the best of you, man. Use college football and get the best of it.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.